don't bother me. I'm thinking. Trying to figure it out. I'm sitting here just trying to think it out now. He's thinking here for me. Do you remember, or did they ever do this in your school when you were a kid? Did you remember the time when they would have what they called a thinking period? And they'd say, put on your thinking caps and sit and try to figure it out for a while. Somehow the idea of 27 seven-year-old kids sitting there with their thinking caps on trying to figure it out reminds me ever so much of the sales department here at WOR. You know, just a minute here. We're trying to think it out. Like one of the salesmen looked in this morning, walking past the office I was in very early for a very special detail here that I was assigned to. They have a grease trap here. And we down in the talent department get it. We rotate the job. And I was in very early, you see. I had on my rubber boots and stuff. And this guy looked in, one of the salesmen, you know, his face wreathed in smiles, wearing his $40 Panama hat, the way all says, you know, I'm waiting for the day when the TV, or particularly the movie world, puts on the screen a genuine salesman. As opposed, you know, to the Willie Loman stereotype, or the Jack Lemmon stereotype, which is the young hip guy that drinks a lot and all that stuff. I'm talking about the real salesman, that great big fat round face with a $40 Panama, and he looks in there, and there I am, knee-deep up there, knee-deep in the grease trap, working away, and he says, you still here? He's for crying, oh, yeah, he says, you're on at night, aren't you? I said, yes, and he went on down the elevator, trailed by 17 gamblings. They have a whole echelon of gamblings here, you know. You don't think that John B. is the only one in line. There's about nine of them that are in the bullpen right now. We've got gamblings right now, in the bullpen that we figure will take us well into the 21st century. So, WR, if any of you are thinking of investing a lot of dough in any radio station, I would like to suggest that... Well, I'm just trying to figure things out. I just learned tonight that there is a new product called Sweet Life Detergent. Yeah, Sweet Life Detergent. Yeah, a little bit of honey there. Taste a little of the sweet elixir of existence. And it won't clog your wash drains, ladies. And it'll leave your hands silky soft and smooth, a 95, 44 foot to help. Sure, that is. Hey, George, yeah. Well, of course, that's not the only thing that we have to concern ourselves with. You know that outside of Somerville, New Jersey, I'm driving to a place here the other day, and I'm a collector of these little tidbits that fly in the air, these little things, you know, in the air, the little pieces of straw. Straws, it's not necessarily in the wind. They just fly around, get in your eyes. But there was a sign outside of Somerville, New Jersey. It says, this rest area exists because the people of Somerville, New Jersey, care. The big wooden outhouse there. Along the road there, you can sit down and drink your beer and have a fist fight and go on. Take care there. You know, it is very difficult to figure out. I've threatened from time to time to tell you the terrible story about the time I saw the thing happen that came exactly, completely removed, right out of a typical two-reel silent comedy. I actually saw it happen. I don't know whether I should tell you that because it's a sickening story. About this guy going in the lake with a can of paint, you don't want to hear about that story, do you? Well, see, there's no point in telling a story unless it has a point. And some things just don't have a point, not at all. Like one day I'm walking along a street in Cincinnati, and there in the middle of Cincinnati is a big building. It's something like the Empire State Building of Cincinnati. It's about 85 stories high. It's a big tower. It stands right up in the middle of Cincinnati. You can't miss it. It's the only big building really in town. It stands right up there in the middle of everything, all little buildings around there. It's noontime, and I'm walking along, and I happen to glance up. And there on the top of the tower, roughly as obvious as the Empire State Building, right on top of the tower is a guy hanging on a rope. His rope goes up to the top of the tower, right to the very tip, and it's attached to the flagpole. And he has one hand on the rope, and the other hand he has a can of paint. And he is a painter. He is up there, and he's hanging. Something happened, and he's hanging there, and he's got a hold of his paint can. And I'm walking with a guy, and I say to him, look at that. And the guy looks up, and he says, it's a painter. And I said, yeah. I said, boy, look at him. He's going to fall right down on the street here in a minute. This is terrible. And we walk another 30 feet, and he says, rotten unions. He was serious. I said, but he's going to fall. He says, all right, he's got a good union. Obviously, this guy was an employer. Well, we went into this restaurant and thought about it. He never did fall, by the way. They got up there and they pulled him up. And later, he appeared on several television shows and ascribed it to good eating and simple, honest, clean thoughts, as well as a damn good rope, I might point out, he had there. But nevertheless, he didn't say much about that rope. He just said it was all because he thought well and had honest thoughts and God was on his side. Have you ever noticed that fighters, after they finish a fight, always say, well, my mother, you've heard him interviewed, a mother says, my mother was out there rooting for me, and, well, somebody up there liked me. Have you ever heard him say that? Many fighters say that. Well, I wonder what the other guy's doing. I mean, what rottenness was he up to? You know, what terrible things. And I'm glad to know that God is on certain guys' side. It's on the Yankee side, obviously. I heard one Yankee say that the other day, that God is actually a Yankee fan. And that's possibly quite true. He's also a Republican. It could very well be Barry Goldwater. I don't know. It's getting pretty confusing at this time. It's hard. Have you ever tried to flap your arms and take off? Just take off, you know, hover a little bit there over the ground. Look down and wave at all the people, you know. Hi, people. Yeah, it's just the way it is. You know, I hate to talk about our confreres here, you know, people in the industry, but these things must be reported. I have this filed right now. I have here before me, I have a document that I know is guaranteed to be very significant, as 47 communists. This document here, which is going into my trivia file, I'm going to try to get Robert Moses to put it in a special vault out there at the World's Fair. I wonder, do any of you know whether or not they're going to have, out at this World's Fair, they're going to have a time capsule like they had in the other one? You remember they had a time capsule? Don't you hear about that? They had a stainless steel time capsule, and I remember a picture of Billy Rose standing by it. Had a lot of pictures of Billy Rose that he felt should be preserved for all time, and they had a big ceremony, and they buried it in the ground. And it was supposed to contain all the significant things of that period. There were a couple of yo-yos. There really were. There were a couple of yo-yos. There was a Mickey Mouse film. There was a copy of Gone with the Wind. You know, the very big significant things of that time. And they buried it. And I understand a few years ago they dug it up again. Like, time is a very short thing here in America. You know, we never think of somebody digging it up 10 million years from now. But they dug it up, and they dug it up in 1959 or something. And, of course, what was so sad about it was that the waterproof, time-proof capsule had rusted. And there were holes in it, and they opened it up. You know, we never know what to do with time. It's always playing rotten tricks. And they opened it up, and a lot of frogs fell out and a couple of minnows. And there were a couple of old shoes and some old footballs and stuff that, you know, had gathered. Because after all, Flushing Meadows has got a lot of junk going on out there. And they got it out, and they opened it up, and the people started to look at the Mickey Mouse films, which by this time were quite yellow and cracked. But it was still Mickey Mouse. And, you know, Mickey, once you've seen him, you've seen Mickey, that's all. And they played with the yo-yo a while, and they looked at the picture of Billy Rose. And somebody says, well, you know, this was the time capsule. Was it all worth it? And by George, you can't argue with that point. I think it is worth it. You can reach up now. If they decide, oh, hey, what is going on here? I had a very strange sensation the other day. In fact, it was this morning. I walk into a subway right here in Midtown Manhattan. By God, the guy's right. I don't. I begin to realize he's right. I do not understand. It's the truth. Serious friends speaking there. If you had your choice now, I think we ought to suggest here, what would you like to see put in a time capsule so that you could have it preserved so that the guys 1,500 years from now, when they dig it up out of the dirt, they could know how it really was now? Now, don't come around and say, beautiful painting by Charlie Brown. That is nothing at all to do with how it really is, believe me. All the artwork from, say, the Etruscans does not tell you how it felt to have a bad knee and be an Etruscan on a hot day. It tells you nothing about the Etruscan life. As much as I'd like to romanticize art and say that it reflects life, I have never yet seen it do that. It usually reflects the artist, but that ain't life. And I really, seriously, what would you like to see put in a time capsule so that 1,000 years from now they know how it really was in New York, huh? Elsa Maxwell, somebody suggested there. Well, she'd be very good, yes, a sprayer with plastic. And put a couple of, very good, I think. Send her like they used to send the pharaohs, you know. They send the pharaohs to their comeuppance with all the stuff around them that was important to them in life. Can you imagine sending Elsa off to what was with the stuff around her, what was important? Oh, boy. Seriously, though, what would you like to see placed in the time capsule? No fair saying you, WOR. WOR has a lot of stockholders, and they would not like it. Actually, though, it might not be a bad idea. This is, by the way, WOR, AM and FM here in New York. And we have Peter Lynn Hayes and Mary Healy starting Monday, September 30th. And they're on at 9:15 in the morning. And let's see, we also have Mandarin House with us. And if you have never tried Mandarin food, I can't do a good Mandarin commercial because Barry Farber speaks Mandarin Chinese. I speak a very bad Cantonese, Indiana Cantonese there. But if you've never tried Mandarin food, please try it. It's magnificent. And by the way, one thing that's been happening, people have been going to the wrong restaurant for some reason or other and writing to me and raising Cain about it. Do not go to just any Chinese restaurant in town and think it's connected with, you know, some people think, well, one Chinese restaurant, the same thing. Aren't you ever talking about a Chinese restaurant? It's not the first one that comes to town. No, there are two Mandarin restaurants. One is called Mandarin East, and the other is called the Mandarin House. One is on 2nd Avenue, just north of 57th Street, and the other is on 13th, between 6th and 7th in the Village. And they both have superb food. They're both a little different, though, you know. Because each one of the chefs is individual. And you should try both of these restaurants. Magnificent. And one thing you should really try is their sea bass, which I think is fantastic. Sea bass done in soy sauce and bean curd. Oh, boy. Either that or sweet and sour. It's just fantastic. Done in the Mandarin style. And they have a bar. 13th Street between 6th and 7th, the Mandarin House, and 2nd Avenue just north of 57. Okay? Now, let's get on. Getting back to the way life really is. I'm thinking about things you could put in this thing. I can think of a lot of stuff I'd like to see put in a time capsule. And, you know, nobody will ever do it. They'll put stuff like a picture of the United Nations building. They'll put a copy of the New York Times and a copy of the Daily Mirror. Well, somebody says put Billy Graham in there. Have you thought of Ben Gurion? I mean, you know. You can put a lot of guys in there. In fact, I can name about 17 statesmen that ought to go in there in a phalanx. As a sort of set group. In a set, they come in a set, you know, like doilies and stuff. And you put them in there, and I could have them in a family group, sort of like a Gothic. What was it, American Gothic? Let's call it World Gothic. But be that as it may, I can think of a lot of things I would like to see put in there. And unfortunately, we're going to put the pedestrian things. Did you hear Robert Moses the other day in the newspaper? Somebody had the temerity to say he didn't like the idea of having that fair. It was not such a good fair they were doing out there. And Moses said, oh, you're all wet. That ended that. It's the way I like to be. I like that kind of thing. I've always secretly had a desire. There are three or four things I would like to have grown up to be. All of them are named Moses. You'd like to have a real firm grip on things, and he does. Now, friends, I can think of a half dozen things I'd like to see in this time capsule. For example, I have about 5,000 things in my trivia file, which tells, really, I think, in my silly way, I think it tells a little bit about our time. For example, for those of you who have Esquire magazine, this current issue, September, I would like to read to you an advertisement now, just taken verbatim. I will not ad-lib anything on it. So do not call me up and say, Shepherd is rotten and sacrilegious. I'm reading you directly from an ad in Esquire magazine, page 166, September. And we have to have proper introduction, a proper sound of our civilization at work. I think throw a little money. Doing, doing, doing. The headline reads, the funniest albums... The funniest of... Hey, watch, both of you. The funniest albums ever recorded. Now, I suppose you wonder what the funniest albums ever recorded are. Another shot of that quick. All together, the funniest albums ever recorded. And the first album, Red's Foxiest, best-selling album, Racetracks, New Soap, The Jackass, one of the funniest albums ever cut. Hattie's Hottest, Laugh of the Party, including Chinese Sex and others. New Racetrack, Red Fox favorite, includes Earthquake and many, many other wonderful cuts. World acclaimed, greatest album ever recorded, dramatically transcribed. Martin Luther King, funniest albums ever recorded. Now there it is. The world is getting to be showbiz. You know, I have a suspicion that had there been a good recording company around when Moses came down from the mount with the Ten Commandments, I'll tell you, within 20 minutes it would be available in stereo with a soundtrack behind it by Dmitri Tiomkin, and it would be given away free as a special Get Acquainted offer in our new Significant Record albums. Complete your collection. March Song, Moses, Martin Luther King, Lenny Bruce, the Andrews Sisters, Joan Baez, all the significant things of our time in your record collection. Quit telling me to stop. I'm reading you this nutty ad. There it is. It's just very special. And it's the Do Too record collection. I kind of like that. Right, George? It has a orchestra and choir accompaniment. It's all included there among the funniest albums ever recorded. I think that is, boy, we ought to stick that in the time capsule. We'll let people know what was going on. You know, speaking of time capsules, I think this should be put into the time capsule. Kind of like this. WOR now brings you... WOR, as part of its special public service shopping programming, brings you its special handy hints and kinks and little bits for those hard to shop for friends and relatives of yours. If you're having a birthday in your house, if your auntie is coming to visit, how about some of these interesting little gifts? WOR's special shopping service brings you handy gifts and wonderful fun things to buy in this 20th century. Yes, we've been shopping all over these days, and we've been going all over. Our legs are just worn right down to a nubbin. Oh, it's so exciting, though, shopping. And what with Christmas just off in the distance there, you can feel the fall air, can't you, friends? You just want to get out and shop and shop and shop. And it's so much fun these days to shop because there's so many wonderful things in the shops. And I have some beautiful things today that I would like to talk to you about that could go under what we call the bric-a-brac department. The little things, you know, the little mad things you buy when you're just out having fun and you want to have a little zest of life. Now, the first thing that we came across, for those of you who are religiously inclined, a lovely gift called Wisdom from the Bible. Lovely inspiration box brings spiritual comfort to you daily. Inside the lovely box are over 150 rolled scrolls, each printed with a familiar, inspiring message from the Bible. Each day you pick out a message with the wooden selector stick, and you'll experience new hope and consolation. I think that's lovely. And it comes in early American design with a Pennsylvania Dutch drawing on the cover. And it's called Hope and Wisdom a Day. And they're beautiful, multicolored plastic capsules, multicolored plastic bits of wisdom that are washable. And now here is another little suggestion for those of you who are just looking about for a gift or perhaps a little fun thing to buy. Fracture Your Friend's Phony Arm Cast. Imitation white plaster cast looks amazingly real. Comes complete with a sling for a real breakup effect. It's good for a laugh. And by the way, is guaranteed to get you a seat on the bus. Collect autographs from your friends. Smooth enough to write on. Win sympathy at the office. It's a wonderful little cast. You can also get one for your wrist. You can get one for your ankle and one for the upper thigh or the pelvic regions. That comes with a set of wooden crutches for additional humor. And now for those of you who are historically minded, we think we have something very special for you now. World-famous military medals are now available through the mail-order catalog. For those of you who didn't get out of Camp Kilmer, for those of you who never even got in at all, this is your way of getting back at them. World-famous military medals. Authentic reproductions cannot be told from the real thing of treasured military decorations, exact in every detail. Intricately crafted designs, perfectly colored and finished, authentically woven ribbons. You can choose from among the wonderful selection, the Croix de Grave from France, the Victoria Cross, and that's a very nice one, the VC, the Victoria Cross of England. The Iron Cross of Germany, I think, is a very interesting one. You know that Adolf Hitler held that one. And the Order of the Crown of Italy. For those of you who never got there, I think you'll find this a welcome addition to the decor in your little apartment. And now, here a suggestion for those executives who are looking for something to do around the office. It's called Executive Waste Basketball. Executive Waste Basketball, and certainly I knew it had to come, and I'm glad it's here at last. The perfect indoor sport for the oh-so-busy executive. File all your trash the new sportsmanlike way. Practice all day long. Outscore the boss. No more trips to the wastebasket. Just toss and see if you can sink a hook shot from back there next to the water cooler. No office is complete without this beautiful walnut finish, backboard, and miniature rope net that fits nicely over the most modern wastebaskets. Yes, there is now something you can do in the office. Play waste basketball. And now, moving on to other things, and perhaps a little more serious, religious desk set. For those of you who are religiously inclined, beautiful Lord's Prayer, printed on a miniature open ceramic Bible, inspirational full-color holy pictures with ballpoint pens, simulated golden edge pages, look like it actually turned, holder in back, keeps the pen intact, and by the way, there is a handy little scratch pad that fits right there where Revelations used to go. And now, once again, we go on this, perhaps on a lighter side. Frankenstein loses his pants. Eerily, he waits on tombstone slab. Then, with monster gestures and loud noises, he prepares to attack. But he muffs the scene as his pants fall down, oh, revealing gay red striped shorts. What? No monster-sized jockey shorts, Frank? No, indeed. So he turns bright red, changes his mind, shuts off his battery, and pulls up his pants and waits for the next fun moment in your house. Now, for those of you who are politically inclined, here is a wonderful set of playing cards. The Kennedy playing cards. The Jack, the Queen, the Joker, and the Ace, all containing faces of your favorite Kennedys. For those of you that are Republicans, this is good for a laugh a minute. Guess who the Joker is? And now, here again, speaking of those of you who are politically minded, make Jack dance. Anytime you move your little finger, adorable JFK plastic puppet dances, gestures, claps his hands with a twist of the wrist, a nod of your fingers. You can make the president dance now. You can have the president reenact famous speeches, debates. You can make up your own stories and whole plays. It's an amazing plastic likeness, lifelike face. And Jack, in this wonderful little model, I am holding it up here for you, you can see it here, is dressed in his best campaign suit. Comes with a selected group of funny speeches that you can read as Jack gesticulates. Fully transistorized, easily washed, and comes in 7 beautiful decorated shades. And now, moving on again, calendar shorts. Spotlight his special dates. He'll never forget an anniversary or a birthday again. They're all brilliantly starred on his shorts. A beautiful collection of shorts containing significant dates in your life on his jockey shorts. Also available in the boxer styles. Well, that's about it, friends, for today's show. Oh, one more thing. For those of you, you remember last year, we broke the news about that little attaché case that was very cleverly designed to look like a transistor radio, but inside it was a wee little refrigerated silver flasky for those of you who like to carry just a wee little nip to carry you on through the day, but don't want the boss to know. Well, it's come full circle now. I'd like to point out one of the newest things that's come along today is a bottle of Teacher's Highland Cream that actually is a radio. A radio instead of a bottle of fine scotch. Never a lost weekend with our unusual bottled portable radio. 9 transistors with quality components give it fine, full sound and selectivity. Unique for the drinking man who is proud of it. And now for those of you who are the fans of the decline and fall of Rome Division Department, we have here a lovely thing which I went over myself and saw it, and it was just beautiful. It's just too bad I can't afford it for my lovely little apartment on the east side. A simple apple becomes a princely dessert when it is served on crystal and with classic English sterling. The sumptuously engraved plate, $150, a single beautiful plate for a single beautiful apple, and that little silver knife and fork, $31.90, you'll at long last enjoy your apples in the morning with this lovely set at just under $200 the set. And so, once again, WOHAR has brought you its shopping service, brought to you every weeknight at the same time, to keep you abreast of those little things that perhaps in the workaday world that you live in, you have a tendency to miss. So happy medal wearing, happy motto picking tomorrow morning, a bit of wisdom here and there, and I hope those shorts don't shrink with that important day. Goodbye, goodbye. I would like to suggest that we just take all these ads and put them right in the time capsule there. Not a further comment there. Just put it in there. Just JFK there winds up. I'm quite sure that if our life had been if you somehow you could transpose modern values back to say 1777, can't you see a guy bringing out a little plastic George Washington that stands in the front of a little plastic boat and points towards Jersey? I suppose then if you're a real sorehead, you get some plastic Hessians. Mercenaries and a lot of things. I used to remember, you know, I remember speaking of the Hessians, I've often told the terrible story about how I made my theatrical debut as George Washington. Well, in this story, I might as well, for those of you who don't know what the story is, I'll repeat it briefly because we have to carry on with that because it's attached with American history very closely. I'm really curious about us, just you, Eddie, me, Lee, all of us sitting around here, just what kind of garbage is in our minds about American history? Is it a big play in your mind? Some big, rotten, corny play? Is it really? Well, what is it? Is it kind of a pageant? Is it kind of a mural in your mind? Do you see Washington and Lincoln and all those guys as part of a gigantic mural, like sort of like painted on the ceiling of Rockefeller Center or something? Well, it's a funny thing. I wonder how many of those guys would even recognize themselves if they came back here. Well, the reason I bring this up is that I'm just curious. I'm often thought about what people 150 years from now really will think about us. Now, we assume that they'll know all about us. They can't possibly not know about us. Oh, and a pig's ear. They couldn't comprehend. They wouldn't know. They couldn't understand our life. They might, because history, you see, is such a tiny partial thing. It only records events and names. And that isn't what makes life, you know, not at all. And I've often thought about what kind of people must have been walking around, say, in 1777. You know, guys just running around hollering, griping, and scratching. The flies are out. And, you know, people walking around. And what we think of them now. Can you imagine you going into say Constitution Hall, or let's say you're going to Independence Hall in Philadelphia, And these guys are all sitting around, and they're debating the Constitution, or the Continental Congress is going. And you walk in, and the first thing that hits you is you can smell everybody's feet. Well, the reason this is so is because, you know, it was a long ride, and they didn't have the same kind of plumbing you have now, and it was hot weather. Are you aware of that? And they wore very heavy clothes. They did not know about wash and wear then. Well, you walk in there, and of course, everybody there, they don't know about that because they accept that as part of their life, just like we accept all the dirt and crud that's all over the streets here in New York without even thinking. We just walk over cigar butts and drunks and beer cans and kick stuff out of the way. We just accept it. And I'm sure that 150 years from now, people will be astounded. You know, they can't believe it. They really can't believe it. Well, yes, so it was then. You walk in and you can smell all that stuff, and the guys are hawking, sneezing around. You know, not morals, but manners were different then, too. It was not an uncommon thing for a guy just to raise his sleeve and go, "Why? Let her go," you know? That's all there was to it. That's why some of these guys had very big sleeves with rags hanging on them. Well, it was a different world than it is now. Oh, yes. Oh, boy, very different world. And these guys, too, had a tendency to be very loud. They did not know the nice guy principles that we know today. If you've ever read any Stendhal, who wrote about Europe of the period, and if you've ever read any stories, contemporary stories, guys didn't think anything of getting to say, "You are a lout," and bang, he bangs him on the head with a broadsword. And once again, the issue is joined. Oh, yes, well, look at this. Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton shot it out over in Jersey. You call it a duel. It was nothing but a fist fight. They just went over and shot at each other. That's all. You can make a lot of talk about it, but I don't know whether or not you'd get along in that crowd. You know, really, you sit there in the crowd, you sit in the back row, see, and somebody gets up and says something. I can just see somebody saying something like, "Well, all men, we hold these truths to be self-evident." Now, I'm reading the draft here. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." And some guy says, "Oh, now, wait a minute. What do you mean?" Well, and the argument starts. Well, within 5 minutes, there's a big hassle going on, and somebody turns around to you, and you're hollering, "Wait a minute now, wait." And somebody turns around and grabs you by the throat, shakes you twice, hits you across the mouth with a pair of white gloves, and 10 minutes later, you are out in Staten Island shooting it out with ball pistols. Well, it's a very different world. You know, it's really very completely different, and we like to romanticize these guys. I would love to do a play or a movie about the really lusty characters that were alive and who created this America. Who really created it and who sweated and sang and hollered, and boy, did they drink. Let me tell you, there never was a more drink, because you see, it was a necessity in those days. It was cold, and they did not have oil heat. So what a guy would do, a guy would lay in a stock of about 5 pints of stout, you see, just to warm the gills up, and by the time he got up off the floor and knocked the table off of him, he was ready to fight everybody. And don't think they didn't. They would come in. Did you ever read the account, some of the great accounts that Melville wrote of that period? Melville's accounts of the inn of the time. Have you ever read any of those things? Boy, you kept your mouth shut in one of those inns. The only time you opened your mouth was to gulp down more hard liquor. Cider, they called it. You know, gulp it down your eyeballs, sweating. And finally, that the whole crew would go reeling up to the sack, hitting each other on the way up with their swords and yelling and hollering. And of course, naturally, it must have been about 6 guys sick on the way up. So it was usually it was a very lusty life. And women only did 2 things. One of them was to shut up. And that was the end of it. very different world. Well, I wanted to see something like it. So as a kid, I have to tell you why I'm connected with Washington so intimately. I made my showbiz debut as Washington in second grade in a Washington pageant. Well, this Washington pageant involved me sitting on a rocking chair. I don't recall exactly the plot, but I was sitting on the rocking chair, and over a little bit to my right and upstaging me slightly was this girl who was playing Martha. Well, I had this wig over my head, and it went down over my ears, so I couldn't hear her lines very good. And so she would say something, and I would keep rocking, and I would talk back and forth. It was terrible. It was an awful thing. But they did have one thing. Flick was one of them. There were four kids among them, Flick and Alex Josue, and Chuck Atkinson and Glenn Atkinson, played Hessians. These guys played mercenaries. And part of the plot, and Ms. Shields had written this, this was a very basic lesson in American history, that these four Hessian mercenaries had come from Hesse, wherever Hesse was. We didn't know what that meant, Hessian mercenaries. We couldn't figure quite what Hessians were. There's not many Hessians around. Do any of you know where the where Hessians are now? These days? Hesse, yes, Hesse. Germany, right? Hesse? Well, when you're living in Hammond, Indiana, Hesse, or Hesse, or Hessians, it's very hard to know where they come from. You figure they might come from the other side of Milwaukee somewhere. It's very hard. Geography is funny. So the four Hessians came in, and they had a speech. And the lead Hessian said to me, I remember the speech somewhat, he said, "George Washington, we have come over to pay honor to you and the great thing you have done to bring freedom and to create this new land where all people are welcome, where all people can live in peace and freedom and love forevermore. We have come as ex-Hessian mercenaries to pay honor and homage to you, George Washington, in this, the last days of your life, as you are about to depart this mortal coil." Well, that's what the kid would say. Then I would turn to him, and I would say, "Sit down, my sons. Sit down, my sons, and make yourself as one of us. And Martha, would you please get the young men some cider? I would like to thank you on behalf of all of us Americans that you have come and have humbled yourself and are paying homage to our great land of freedom, our great land of opportunity where all men live in freedom and peace forevermore. As the father of the country, I can only say I thank you from the bottom of all of Americans' hearts. And now, young men, you will find that Martha bakes a very fine piece of cake. Bring in the cake, Martha, and let us sit and enjoy ourselves as we live through the twilight of our long and filled lives. As the father of the country, I say, bless you, my sons, and pass the cider." Well, now, it was a very stirring moment there in American drama. As well as, I might say, it taught me, and forevermore, I have been very, very much involved. It taught me a lot about history, and I've been sort of involved in history ever since that time. Now, I didn't know what a mercenary was. In fact, I remember standing around backstage there. Alex Josue asked Miss Snyder. He said, Miss Snyder, by the way, was the drama teacher there, and Miss Shields had written the play. It was a very involved thing. Miss Norton was the producer. She was the lady principal. And it was the PTA that was putting up the dough. They were also sitting out there, and you could hear their stays creaking and all that. We know what we were doing. But I remember Joshua saying, Miss Snyder, what is a mercenary? Because he liked to think he was a soldier, see? And she says, "Well, what is a mercenary?" And she says, "Well, a mercenary is a man who will sell his services." Joshua thought that for a minute. He says, "You mean he gets paid?" And she says, "Well, yes, he sells his services." Well, Joshua says, well, my old man gets paid. I thought the mercenaries were bad guys." And she said, "Well, he is selling his services to another country. He is selling out." "Oh." And so Joshua comes out on the stage. And I remember both these four guys looking at me saying, "We are ex-mercenary Hessians, Hessian mercenaries, and we have come to pay you homage." Well, now, ever since that time, the word mercenary, for some reason or other, instead of having a negative feeling in my mind, I've always felt good because I associate it with Flick. And Flick was my old friend. You know, Flick is a mercenary. And this is the way history is made. And so for a long time, it must have been, I was well into my corporal year in the Army before I began to, it even began to faintly fit into my mind what in the world a mercenary was. I wonder how many of you can think of what a mercenary is. Seriously, can you imagine a guy going off as a private? I'm not talking about a guy who gets a job as a general in the French Army or something. A guy going off as a private, Ed. He goes off to fight in another country's war. He has no stake whatsoever in it and is getting shot at. It's an interesting man. So that the only reason I bring this up is it brings you into a kind of area where you can kind of understand that era just a little bit, because that was a common practice then. Mercenaries were not at all uncommon. In fact, most of the armies were mercenaries then. You just go out and hire a bunch of guys. Why, as a matter of fact, as recently as the Civil War, if you didn't want to go, you just ran out on the street and grabbed a guy and sent him. If you had a servant, if you had a servant, you could send the servant to do it for you. Or you give him $100, that's it, paid the army. That's the end of it, they take you, you know. So this was another kind of mercenary. It's been pretty recent. And it was a very different world. I wonder now, since we are going to have out at the World's Fair, they're going to have a Hall of American History, I read. Now, this is the whole point of this whole jazz. I wonder if any of it will be anything like real history is. Or will it show great big monuments, you know, of George Washington standing at the front of a boat pointing at Jersey? Really? Will it show anything to do with the way it was, the kind of guys they were? Do you know that nobody today in America could even think of writing the Constitution? We just don't think that way anymore. We just don't. We don't think, even the most profound sorehead would never think of the Bill of Rights. Oh, yeah, because it's the soreheads that often get the maddest over the Bill of Rights. You know? Interesting thing. And so they must have been very different guys. We like to think that we're a direct line of Americans, you know, all the way back to American history. I don't think so. I really don't. I don't think that we're any more like the Americans of 1777 than, let us say, the average Englishman walking around today is anything like Samuel Johnson, who was around at the same period, roughly, or Boswell. Not at all. He's a very different breed, completely a different breed. And the thing that continually occurs to me is what that breed would think of this breed. And this is not to put any value judgment on our breed. But what would they think? This hard-drinking, fist-fighting crowd all the way down the line. Let me tell you, Jefferson could lay away a good pint of stout himself, you know, and always did, to the last day of his life, singing loudly when he did it. We like to see these guys quietly sitting there with a white wig and a rocking chair, you know, with patent leather shoes. Forget it. About every 5 minutes, Jefferson would go, "Hoi patoi," and grab another jug.